Good morning. It is 9:13 a.m. We are calling the Dallas City Council briefing meeting to order on Wednesday, February 17th. It is great to have our invocation this morning led by Pastor T.J. Reese of the New Creations Church in Mr. Callahan's district, District 5. He founded the New Creations Ministry in 1983 with emphasis on serving and impacting families. And families are everything to make a strong communities, and we agree with that. Thank you for your no-cost premarital and marriage counseling to struggling couples and affordable child care through your Learning Center. He also established the Berean International School of Ministry to train individuals called by God to serve. He's an alumnus of Texas A&M University. And he holds a bachelor's of science and master's of business administration. He's happily married to his high school sweetheart sitting right here, the beautiful Georgia Reese. They have two children, Andre and Tiffany, and four grandchildren. And I got the pleasure to be with him a couple of years back when they had sponsored and created the Taste of Pleasant Grove, which was a great event. Please, Pastor, come to the podium and lead us in invocation, and I'll lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance after that. All rise.
We thank you for allowing us to experience the tasks that are vital to the neighborhood, to this city, even around the world. We pray that you will be present here today, that you will speak to our hearts, and that our will be subject to you, and that you will show yourself strong in our behalf, and Lord, keep the city safe. Let everyone understand that you love them with an everlasting love, and that their lives are destined to see you personally. And so we thank you now that you will continue your work in us, and that you will do exceedingly abundantly beyond all we ask or think or pray for. To you be all the glory and praise, both now and forevermore. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, Pastor, for being here. And on to Pleasant Grove. Let's thank you for building a great community down there. Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you for a personal moment. I just want to say the Reeses are fine people, and TJ is the treasurer for Pleasant Grove Ministerial Alliance. He's been with us from the very beginning. Their church is active in our community. He and Georgia are really sweet people. I know their daughter Tiffany, and as you mentioned, they did that Taste of Pleasant Grove, which was a really a good, solid project. But we need more churches in Pleasant Grove. We need we got a lot of people that need it, and those are people that really roll up their sleeves to do good things. And really appreciate y'all being a part of our meeting today, and thank you for coming down. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Mr. Caraway.
I'll make it very quick. Pastor, thank you and your church in Pleasant Grove. I just want to acknowledge the fact that the beautiful wife, Georgia Reese, carries a very strong name here in the city of Dallas as related to cultural affairs. And she was very, very involved, Mayor, with I think it was cultural affairs. Was it cultural affairs?
Social
service. Whatever it was, nothing could happen without Georgia Reese's name, all right? I just wanted to acknowledge that. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our morning speakers.
Thank you. Good morning. We did have a cancellation for your five registered speakers this morning. Will be Dolores Phillips, Enir Pepik, Gregory Turner, Nubia Parada, and Jeremy Boss. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time on the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Rawlins only. And if you have any handouts at this time, please go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, Dolores Phillips.
Dolores Phillips, 3101 Luxor Way, Dallas, Texas, 75233. The emails that you received yesterday and on today, those documents were filed October 23rd, 2013, 2 days prior to Green Oaks. First and foremost, I want to say for the record, preservation notices were sent to the universities, City Hall, DPD, and OCR to reserve their records, because I'm diligently asking United States Department of Justice and the FBI to go back and backtrack and investigate thoroughly all these connections and networks, just as they are in the Nassar case, to show that Nassar is not only a victim because he was condoned and enabled by the teams and connections and networks that were worried about image and money, just as they are here. I also want to say that on October 25th, the meeting that was instructed by Mayor Rollins, Corporal Cotner said, when I introduced myself, I said, Mayor Rollins said, we are to resolve the corruption from 2009 of the 911 calls being erased and deleted unlawfully, the same as they did the video from October 25, 2013. It's one and the same. But because minorities have the audacity to speak of injustices, the same entities that are implemented to assist minorities and the poor for going through injustices are the same departments and agencies that re-victimize minorities and the poor. I'm going to name those entities by experience. That would be OCR, that would be EEOC, and it's documented, and it will come to light. It took a while for some of these ladies and me too, and time's up, to come and be heard, but it's not taking me that long. All I need is the truth. I don't have to have masses. Also, I want to share with you, when you speak of injustices against Dallas, no matter if you're non-minority or minority, you're going to inevitably endure blackballing and being ostracized. That's fine. When I filed my bankruptcy in 2012, I filed that pro se. I then retained an attorney, Allman Law Firm. My income was less than $1,500, $1,600 a month, but my monthly trustee payments were $750. I'm alleging that's because I was speaking of injustices against the city of Dallas and DPD, as Shanna Lopez, ex-rookie cop who was blackballed and terminated from DPD in 2006 and pleaded with the department to get help for David Kattner. He allegedly committed suicide 9 years later, December 2015. So this is, Dallas has a history of retaliation, but I'm going to be the one who humbly endures what you give and give it back in peace and truth. I also want to say to City Council Member Casey Thomas, on last year I contacted a member for the streets that they were supposed to be putting a sidewalk in for the elderly off of Cocker Hill and King.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips.
And they did not. Can you let him know that?
Thank you.
I do appreciate it. Have a good one.
Your next speaker, Enir Pepik.
Good morning. Thank you for your time today and for the opportunity to express my opinions. So its address is 10715 Tuberville, Dallas, Texas, 75243. Business name is Vermont Industries. So what's going on in this business? Acid washing the metal pipes which goes in storm drains. And that will end up in our faucets eventually. So it washes off by rain, it goes in the rivers, ended up in the lakes, and we drink that water. I reported this like repeatedly. 15 people showed up, like from the storm drains, William Clemens, City Dallas, Marshall, City Council, code compliance, never nothing happened. I just believe that city inspectors need to have a little bit more power to put in a check these people, like which is repeatedly failing and disobey. So that's one of the issues. There's another two businesses that they overspraying, paint overspray. It's the same deal. It goes on the roofs. It goes on the street. It gets washed off with the water and ends up in our lakes. Never resolved. One more time. Address of the property, it's 10715 next door, third business in the same building. They're maintaining the equipment for food spa and nail salons. Same deal. They're washing with the chemicals. It goes in the streets, end up in our lakes. I mean, we need to think of our kids. We get this nature just to use, not to abuse, and this is what we're doing. Everybody told me that I'm wasting my time coming in here and talking to you guys about this. I disagree. I believe that you guys should take the proud of the opportunity to represent us and help us in this case. Another issue is North Haven Trail. That's also an alley for North Haven Road Street. It's inaccessible to the utility vehicles. Wild animals are like outrageous for city limits. Coyotes are like in a packs, large coyotes. There is no lights. And I believe that these properties paid enough taxes that we could maintain this little street, which is about, in the heart of Dallas, about less than a mile, that we should put nicer paving there. So it's very short, 3 minutes to address the rest of the issues. So I'll just thank you for your time and hope and believe that you will take further action, since these 15 people that showed up in my office and never did nothing, I felt that we're wasting our tax money on having them working their jobs. Thank you for your time. Have a great day.
Thank you for coming. It's never a waste of time to come down here. Appreciate it.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Mr.
Clinton.
Can we
have someone from Code meet with him and report back to me with the status of
these things?
Thank you.
Mr. Pepik, we'll contact you, someone from Code. Thank you. Thank you.
Next speaker, Gregory Turner. Not present. Nubia Parada. Not present. Jeremy Boss has canceled. Megan Probus. Not present. Dale Smith.
Once we get up on the screen, what I'm about to show you is a black newscast that we're promoting to distribute on cable access because of the lack of any kind of. That's kind of off.
You're going to have to speak up a little bit louder, Mr.
Okay.
Smith.
Okay. Because of the lack of any kind of black media communications on any of our TV stations, we decided to develop a show called The Other Side of Today. This is a promo of it. Hopefully we can calibrate it and get it to play right. Let's try it. Audio.
As our brilliant black millennials lead us into the age of the digital and AI evolution.
As our incredible black men bring their leadership and grace to a nation starving for it.
We are the dynamic
information portal
to show the way.
This is the other side of today.
I'm Nicole Neal.
And I'm Fred Jones.
And this is the other side of today.
Report detailing the record-setting spending power of African-American women has further boosted the confidence of black female entrepreneurs. They say the information proves their undeniable value to the United States and the global economy. The report, titled African-American Women, Our Science, Her Magic, was released by Nielsen during the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation annual legislative conference. The taxpayers want city officials to work on their behalf. Citizens have a social contract with the city. In the social contract, citizens expect the government to make decisions that enhance the quality of life for everyone. Bond propositions include funding for streets, arts, public safety, homelessness, economic development, funding for downtown parks, and renovation for Fair Park.
Welcome to We Talk Books on the Other Side of Today. I am your host, Erlina Green Hamilton. Today I'm super excited to talk to Lady Trinette.
I kind of want to hear you speak. Okay.
Okay. One out.
You got one more minute.
Hello.
Well, my conversation is strictly access to cable, our cable access channels. Right now, they're basically showing around the clock replays of what goes on in here. We need to have some kind of black communications in our community to talk about what you want them to hear. Listen to what they want to hear, and we're set up to stream, broadcast, cable, the whole 9 yards. So that's pretty much what I'm here for, and that's what we want to see.
Okay, great. Thank you. I know you've met with my office, mm-hmm. and you're meeting with the city staff, and we'll take it into consideration. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker, Leon Holman.
Good morning, Council. My name is Leon Holman, and first of all, I'd like to send my appreciation to Ms. Charlotta Sharp and Councilman Thomas's office for the cooperation that we received in terms of getting assistance with trying to get on the vendors list to provide social services for homeless people. And I want to say thank you to Ms. Sharp for that, her cooperation and her information that she provided for us. But I'm mainly here to talk about Opportunity Dallas. Some of you should be familiar with them. I'm a part of that group, and we've done extensive work to help create a housing policy for the city. When we met last night, we talked about something that we saw on the news concerning the city's hiring a consultant for economic development, housing development, et cetera. And I'm here as a part of that group to urge that the council consider our recommendations before they go out and get another consultant, because we've been working since August. We've got about 30 stakeholders. We have everyone from the chairman of DHA to we have developers. We have people who are with the Realtors Association. We've done extensive work on trying to develop a comprehensive policy advisory letter composition so that we can help you guys formulate a policy for housing and create opportunities on both sides of the city. And so we'd appreciate it if you could take our recommendations under consideration. We're going to be Mike Potofsky, the chairman, is going to be presenting for some of you guys. And so we'd appreciate it and hope that you would have the wisdom to look at some of our considerations before you spend money on another consultant. Because what we're trying to do, we're trying to make sure that you see all sides of this picture before the city invests any more money into a consultant. We've done this work for free. We've got people from Larry James, chairman of City Square, I'm sure you're familiar with. We've got Miguel Solis from Dallas Independent School Group. We've got other people who are greatly involved in the community. And we just appreciate it if you would look at our recommendations, take them back to your staff, and try to use them as a part of what you're going to come out to the public with for as far as the housing policy and economic development. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll take up our voting agenda.
We have one more speaker.
Oh, that's five, yeah. Isn't it?
No, that's five. Four. Your fifth speaker, Andreas Fulcher. Not present. Right. Wendy Lopez.
Good morning. My name is Wendy Lopez. Thank you for allowing me the time to speak. Today I come to you to ask that we get together and try to get an animal cruelty task force. I understand that the City of Dallas, the police department, is looking to contract and outsource it to a third party to have them do the investigations as far as animal cruelty goes. One of the reasons why I think it's very important is because I am a pet owner, and I know that the City of Dallas has improved as far as making regulations to for pet owners to get their animals fixed and, you know, holding pet owners responsible. But now I know that it's the time to make sure that the city is doing their part in holding the people who are breaking laws regarding animals and hurting them, holding them accountable as well. Again, like I said, I know the city's improved in regards to the animals, and I'm grateful for that. I have a lot of friends that invest their time, their personal time, to try to help with the city. But one thing that I want, as far as if it's going to be outsourced or contracted to a third party, that they are held to the same accountabilities that you guys are, or that I am in my job, where it's transparent and they're being held accountable for doing the job that they're required to do. We need to be able to see the reports as far as what kind of cruelty cases are happening, you know, who's conducting these illegal acts, and what is it. That way we can better understand on how we can prevent it or minimize it here in the city. I thank you all, and I know we can do better, and I know I have a lot of friends that are here to support you guys and helping to make sure that it gets better.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Feld, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Lopez, for coming down. Hi, Stephanie. How are you? Mayor, can we get someone from staff to please address her concerns so that...
Glad.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. We'll get somebody to meet with you. Thank you.
This concludes your morning open microphone speakers. We'll now move to your voting agenda. Item 1, approval of minutes of the January 17, 2018 City Council meeting.
We got a motion and second. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 2, consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning we have a full council and individual appointments. Nominee for full council appointment to the Reinvestment Zone 13 Board, Grand Park South, Pierre Jamar Moten, is being nominated by Councilmember Felder. Nominees for individual appointments to the Animal Advisory Commission, Diane Bishop, is being nominated by Councilmember Grayson. Ms. Bishop meets the general public special qualification. To the Board of Adjustment, Ruth Torres is being nominated by Councilmember Felder. To the Park and Recreation Board, Taylor Tones is being nominated by Councilmember Thomas. To the Permit and License Appeal Board, Linda Neal is being nominated by Councilmember Narvaez. And to the Youth Commission, Timothy Beecham is being nominated by Councilmember Felder.
So moved.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? One opposed. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, your briefings continue.
Thank you. Mr. Budnex, we'll take briefing item A up.
Thank you, Mayor, and staff. Walks to the table. This is the first quarterly report on Dallas 365. In your backup, you should have the detailed report. Today will be a high-level overview of that and discussion about where we are in our performance this first quarter. As you recall, the budget theme was service first, and one of the things that we talked about was trying to identify and report out in a transparent way, how we are doing on a daily basis. And so this is our first attempt to do that. And so I look forward to the discussion as well as the presentation today. I'll turn it over to Ms. Elizabeth Raich, our chief finance officer.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Brodnick. Excuse me, Ms. Raich. What we're going to try to do is get all this done this morning, all right? In the spirit of, we have two briefings, if we can stay on point and be big picture on this stuff, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, and I apologize for forgetting my nameplate this morning. Elizabeth Raich, Chief Financial Officer. Today we're going to provide an overview of the Dallas 365 initiative, which you heard about quite a bit in the budget process, and so we're happy to be here today to talk about our first quarter progress. We'll also introduce the Dallas 365 dashboard to you and to the public. We've provided a copy of the report, which has more detail to it. And so I'd like to get right into taking a look at the results. As Mr. Brodnick said, we are committed to service first 365 days a year. So Dallas 365, as you know, of course, we have 6 strategic priorities in the city. We've chosen 35 metrics that fit under one of those 6 priorities, and that's what Dallas 365 is a measure of accountability for the city with the public. You'll see that we have a dashboard link here, and hopefully we'll be able to click into that today and show that to you. Mm-hmm. So this is online on our city website, and it is a dashboard, and the data is here as it is in the report. And I'll explain about the data and the meanings of the colors, et cetera, but at the top of the dashboard, we have our six strategic priorities. And if a member of the public or you wanted to click on any one of those, you could go immediately to the measures within that priority and see those. Or you can just scroll down, which I'll ask Dominic to do, and see that here in this blue button, you can click through to the full report that has the details. But then just for a quick view, just scroll all the way down the page and you'll see all of our measures with a quick view. And we will be updating this dashboard monthly. And so, and we invite the public, of course, to provide feedback at the bottom. We like to hear and, of course, be accountable for our results. And so do invite the public to provide feedback on Dallas 365. So that dashboard will be updated monthly. And then this quarterly report will provide a written static report each quarter with some explanations about what it is that we are doing and if we are not on target for any of our metrics, what it is that we are doing to correct our course and to get on target for the year. We are currently on target in each of our strategic priorities, as indicated by the green and by the check mark. And on target means that we are within 5% of our goal for the year. So we are at 95% of the target or better. And in the first quarter, that makes a lot of sense because we only have one quarter of the year. And so wanted to indicate that we are on target with all of our strategic priorities. As I go into the individual measures, you'll see that there are some which we've indicated are caution with a yellow exclamation point. And those are ones where we are between 6 and 20% off the target. So we still, and I'll explain some of those results. Some of it is seasonality. Some of it is other reasons for that. And so in those, we're in caution. And then there are a few where we are more than 20% off of our goal or our target. And those are marked with a red X, needs improvement. So looking at public safety, I just want to cover a few of these. And, of course, I'm happy to answer questions on any of them at the close of the presentation. But I'm going to go through and pick a few select to give you an idea of the data that we're looking at and how we're analyzing that. So I'll start with number one in fire rescue, the average response time for the first paramedic. In this measure, we are on target. In the terms of seconds, we're a little bit above our target, but we're within that 5% range. And I would point out that DFR has undertaken initiatives such as implementation of tiered EMS dispatch software, mobile community health paramedics, the Right Care Team launch, which I know you all know about, and, of course, adding more ambulances and resources to help achieve that goal. So year to date, they're at 5 minutes and 15 seconds. The target is 5 minutes. And so with the peak demand rescue unit that you all authorized in the budget beginning its operations this in January, we do expect that we will get this onto target by the end of the year. The next one to give you an idea of what we're looking at here is the fourth one under police, response time for priority dispatched priority one calls. And in this one, I wanted to point out, and you can see it in the more detailed report, that our response time has actually been going down in the first quarter of the year. It was 9:16 in October, 9:13 in November, 8:29 in December. Our target is 8 minutes. So we are seeing improvement through the first quarter of the fiscal year. And in January, the police departments implemented a process geared toward reducing response times and improving those service levels. And in that process, the night major supervisors have been assigned to monitor the 911 calls for service, oversee officer activity, and ensure that we're properly deploying all of our resources. So we've seen progress this first quarter, and we expect to see continued progress. So it is a caution for now, but this is one where we would expect to get that onto target. The next one I'll cover is one where we have a needs improvement, number 8, number of community events attended. And this is within the police department. And I will just say that We've had, of course, attrition, as you know, and have not been able to hire to replace all of the attrition we've experienced in the last couple of years. And so devoting officers to those crime-fighting activities. Now, community engagement against events are, of course, very, very important. However, in this case, we see the needs improvement because we have been devoting limited officer resources to other duties like patrol. And so we certainly will work to be out in the community, and we have information in our detailed report about how community groups can ask for a representative from the police department to address their group. And so we'll continue to look at this, but this is one where it needs improvement simply because of the resources available and the prioritization. Moving on to mobility solutions. Again, overall, it's on target. However, I want to go through a few to explain some of them. The first one that I'll look at is number 9, potholes repaired. This one, we actually are above target, and we've repaired more potholes in the first quarter than one might expect if you were to just divide the yearly number by 12. And so the reason for this is that in the winter months, some of the prior pothole repairs deteriorate more rapidly, and of course with the weather that we have additional potholes appear, and so we are out there repairing these potholes. We do so within 5 days or within 24 hours if it's deemed an emergency, and so it's understandable that in the first quarter we're actually producing more than our target because of the winter months. And I will say, too, that in the future we actually would hope that we would repair fewer potholes, not because our service level has declined, but because with the bond package that was approved, as our street conditions improve, we certainly would like to see this number go down. Number 11, number of lane miles resurfaced, is one I wanted to point out because it's a needs improvement item. But this is one where seasonality comes into play. So you might see the needs improvement and think that that is a mark against a department or against the city. But in this case, we actually schedule this work for the warmer months, for spring and summer. And so we do have a contract in place to complete all of the work that we've promised through this measure. But it's just not as able to be done in the winter, and we schedule it in the warmer months. So I just wanted to point that out because, again, you might see the red X and think that that's a negative, but in this case it really is an issue of seasonality. Number 13 in sanitation services is tons of recyclables collected. And this is one where we have a caution. We're within 20% of the target, but we're not within 5% of the target. I wanted to point this one out because this is one where we really need the community's help to meet the target. Certainly tons of recyclables collected is largely based on what our public does. And so we've offered in our full report a link to get more information about recycling, and we are engaged in public education campaigns about recycling to try and get our tonnage of recyclables up. And so this is one where it's caution, but I would ask the public to help us out here and work on recycling activities and make sure that we're recycling all of the material that we can. In economic and neighborhood vitality, I'll start with number 17, which is the average cost per home repair. Again, this is a needs improvement with a red X. But in this case, as you know, the housing department is working on revamping the rules for home repair. And those are not expected to go into effect until April. And so our current programs only allow a maximum of $20,000. And so it's just by logic going to be impossible to get an average of $75,000 until we change the program rules that allow us to get up there. So this is one where, because the new program rules will only be in place for about 6 months of the year, we may not get to this target by the end of the year. However, we should see that average go up after the new program rules are implemented. Moving to number 19, net new jobs created. This is one that in performance management we call an outcome measure. So it's not that the city of Dallas is out there hiring in order to create these jobs, but through our programs we are working to increase employment within the city. And so this is an outcome measure in that we are using data from the Texas Workforce Commission current population survey to show the net jobs. So not only those that have been gained, but those that have been lost in the economy so that we can see how the city of Dallas is doing. And so year to date, we are on target with net new jobs created. And I will say, too, that the Office of Economic Development is planning to include in all incentive agreements net new jobs tied to those incentives. So we'll get more data specific to the Dallas incentives, but in this case, it is broader Dallas outcome data. Number 20, I like to point out, just because this is one we talk about quite a bit, the overall value of permits issued. We have been at over $4 billion for the last few years, and that is our target of, again, this year, trying to maintain that consistency in terms of value of permits issued. And I'm pleased to report that we are on target, that through the first quarter, of course, it would be $1 billion, but we're over that $1 billion in terms of permits issued. So that is very good news. And as you know, through recent action, we've acquired a new system to try and do electronic plan review. And so there are things that we are doing to try and improve the experience for the development community and the speed with which we can offer those permits. Human and social needs, number of seniors served. This is a caution, so it's a yellow exclamation point. And so, again, this is one where we're looking at community education with the services that we offer. And you may have seen Mr. Broadnax's Taking Care of Business note last evening, in which he talked about the senior listening sessions that are ongoing. That is one of the efforts tied to this performance measure. And so we offer information in our detailed report about how people can find out about services offered, and we are working to conduct that outreach to try and increase the number of seniors served. The next one I'll talk about is number 24, homeless solutions. This is a very good news story. We are exceeding the target for unduplicated homeless persons placed in housing. In October, it was 42, November 35, and December 23, so we are above that quarterly target. And so this is a result of community partnerships and other items that our Office of Homeless Solutions is undertaking to serve the homeless population. In quality of life, I'll start with number 26, the number of single-family rental properties inspected. Again, this is on target. This one I wanted to show you because it demonstrates progress on an important council policy decision, a decision that you made in October of 2016, amending the code to allow the city to inspect the interior and exterior of single-family homes identified as rental properties. And we believe there are about 50,000 of these properties. And so since the goal is to inspect once every 5 years, the goal for this year is 10,000 properties. We are above that goal for the first quarter and continuing our education campaigns to have those properties register and come into compliance with the policy that City Council passed. The number of lots mowed and cleaned is a red needs improvement. I point this out again to say that this is one that's seasonality. You may not mow your lawn very much in the month of December, and turns out the city does not do that much either. So we will see these numbers increase and get back on target in the spring-summer months when we do more mowing and cleaning of lots. And so this is one that's seasonal, and I wouldn't be concerned about the red needs improvement at this point. Percent increase in field impoundments, number 30, a green on target. This is one where I think we can compliment Dallas Animal Services for their work to implement the BCG recommendations and to improve service. And so they have really focused on field impoundments. They've added more animal officers. They've added shifts. And so they have done a bang-up job in bringing in more animals. And I didn't cover it, but in the previous measure, you'll notice their live release rate is up quite a bit as well and above target. And so those two combined really show that they are doing an effective job out there. The final one I want to point out for purposes of this discussion is library visits in person, online, and for programs, which is a yellow caution. However, this is one where in the budget you approved additional hours for our libraries. Those hours went into effect in January. That is not reflected in this data yet. And so we expect with the additional hours and the service that we're able to provide to the community in those locations that we will see this come onto target very, very quickly, and the number of library visitors will increase. We've also, in our public document, in the full report, added a link for folks to look at hours and locations so that if they're perusing this report and are interested in visiting a library, they'll know where to go. So that hopefully gives you a flavor of the first quarter results and how Dallas 365 is working. I would invite you to visit our dashboard monthly. We will have monthly data on the dashboard, and we will do, as I said, this static report quarterly. We will be presenting this report in future quarters to the Government Performance and Financial Management Committee and, of course, making it available to the public and to all of you as well. At this point, I'd love to receive any feedback or any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And look, thank you all, and thank the city manager for this first quarter update of 365. I'm going to very quickly move into something. Let me go to number 17, and that's on page 8, I believe, page 817. And make sure that we, as we look at number 17, and to the city manager, I want you all to review, as we're making policy, foundations. We've talked about foundations. Somehow we're going to have to deal with the foundations. When we fix the houses and we fix the roof and we fix the windows, we fix the doors, it's not in our policy at this particular point, I believe, to address foundations. To go through it and fix that without fixing foundations, then that only means that the roof is going to crack again, the windows are going to shift again, only because of the foundation. So, Mr. City Manager, I want us to, as we set these policies forward in home repair for seniors, I had a home repair meeting listening session on yesterday at Beckley Center where there were about 75 seniors that were there. The number one discussion was foundations. So we need to implement that somehow into home repairs. Economic development, number 20, the value of permits issued. That's fine. I just want to make a comment on permits, that we need to do a better job in making sure that we're getting people serviced with their permits, okay, when they go over on Jefferson, so we can get through the crud that we have over there. The number of seniors served on number 21, that's just something I want to speak out for the seniors, and eventually I'm going to have a proposal, and I'm trying to draft something now that will address a way that we can deal with seniors. I hope to have that proposed ordinance change at least by next week that will also address seniors. I'll close with the fact that I know in this report we have not discussed bicycles. I want to make sure that I'm in tune with bicycles, so we can put that on this chart to see how we're going to regulate it. On my way here this morning on Ackert, there were at Ackert, at Corinth, where the orange bikes are, they were unloading the trucks with brand-new bikes with cardboard, so I want us to kind of get a handle on that. I just saw about 300-400 bikes that they got parked out now off of an 18-wheeler. And the bike, so I just wanted to throw that out. I'm going to save time. I'm going to stop at 7:20. Thank you, Mayor.
Bravo. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Broadnax, I know that you've been excited about this new performance measure reporting system, and I am too. I think this is significantly better in terms of providing data than what we've had in the past. But I think that this is, I think I would praise this as a good first step and would like to help refine it. There are some measures on here that, to me, I don't understand just from looking at the presentation how they relate to the overarching goals that we're trying to achieve. I've never seen the City Hall create any job that wasn't a W-2 job here at City Hall. That's a measure that you're going to based on what the economy does, you're going to either love it or hate it. And I don't perceive that we have really any control over that or the value of the permits issued. I don't mind tracking it, but it's a significantly different measure than something that's a performance measure for the employees of the city of Dallas. And I just want to make sure that we're not taking credit for things we didn't do and then later, 36 months from now, being blamed for stuff we have no control over. That may just be a pointing it out type suggestion. Some of these are measured on different metrics than we've been using to create policy, which is really weird to me. Tons collected for recycling, we've never used that as a measure when we've talked about policy. We've talked about percentage diverted. And so I would much prefer to see us use consistent measures. Tons collected, anytime you're using nominal reporting, you run the risk of over time misstating things because what we really care about is real terminology, not nominal. And in this case, percentage diverted is a much better measure than tons collected. So I just want to make sure. I don't know how number of arrests by the narcotics division makes us safer. As a matter of fact, I think I can prove the opposite. So let's have the measures relate very, if there's a way, I know that there's a reason that you all put these measures on these pages. Do you have a concise way of explaining that to me? And I don't mean right now. I mean, can you send me the backup that you use to say these are the things that council really needs to know about? Is that a reasonable request?
Yes, and I agree with many of your comments. We certainly can talk with you about how we selected these measures. Each of the departments looked at measures and indicated which ones they wanted to include, and then we talked about them as an executive team to come up with what the 35 would be. But I think you're right that this is a first step, that as we build this performance culture, we will have more and more of the conversations that you've just had or points that you've just made about are these the right measures? And I think to your point about the jobs measure, that is certainly a citywide measure that may or may not be directly related to, you know, the work that we're doing. And so in that particular measure, we're working to change it to talk about whether our incentive projects created jobs, first of all, and get that reporting. But then working on a state of the city dashboard, which might include measures that are much more broad and don't necessarily speak to the work of the cities, but speak to the state of the city. And so asthma rate, literacy rate, I mean, those are things that, like you said, are we taking credit or blame for? Not necessarily, but they might be good indicators.
Well, Ms. Rach, it could be as simple as putting them in a different color on the chart or in a different page on the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to criticize the idea that we want to look at outcome measures that we don't have 100% control over. That's not a bad thing. I just want to make sure that they're clearly delineated on the report. And part of this, the EcoDev thing, I think you needed to present this dashboard in the way that you want it to appear going forward, but it's clear that the EcoDev measures just aren't fully baked yet, and that's really not a problem. I met with Mr. Pogue yesterday. He just got here, and as we had the long discussion recently, we're probably 12 months away from having even a draft of an economic development comprehensive plan. That's okay. If we, the council, haven't defined our goals for economic development, it is a little bit weird for us to ask you to give us performance measures on the goals we haven't defined. So I really don't want this to be perceived as criticism. I think this is a great first step, but I would very much like to be involved in kind of the guts of how do we refine it. If I were a department head, it would be tempting to create measures that put me in a really good light, which is what we have done historically here at the City of Dallas in regard to the budget. The performance metrics that we used to get on each little budget page were really funny. And this appears to me to not be that. I think this is department heads legitimately trying to give us the information we need, but we need to have some feedback to that process to refine what those metrics are. So when do you think you could get the sort of explanation to me of how the metrics relate to overarching goals?
I'll certainly set something up with you, probably not this week, given that it's Wednesday, but within the next week or so.
That sounds great. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. McGue.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. He took the words out of my mouth on that question. Sometimes I don't understand where the measure came from, and so I'd like to have the same understanding moving forward on that. My other question is, and I think you said at the beginning, but I'm having a hard time with some of the areas where we're not meeting. Why are we putting a green check mark?
It's really a threshold issue that we've set a threshold that if you're within 5% of the target, we're saying you're on target. Now, at the end of the year, there's only two choices. You met it or you didn't. But in terms of an indicator of where we are with that target, within 5%, we're saying we're on target.
Okay. There are just a few of these that it just kind of bothers me to just look at the numbers and say it's obviously not on target, but we're saying it is. So I just want to make sure we're clear on that part of it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'd start by saying, you know, this is a great start. I love the easeability of it on the city website, being able to click, and I think we need to make sure we share that with the public that this is available. And I wanted some reassurance, and I think you addressed this, that there would be some fluidness related to measures that we are monitoring if it's, you know, policy changes or things that we looked at. And so I feel comfortable with your answers there. And then the other, you know, we do have a dashboard that we see in public safety. And I would just encourage you to make sure that those numbers that we're reporting on this are the same as we're reporting in the dashboard. Maybe it was that you rounded the number on response time, but that we weren't meeting it. We were at 9, because I thought we were in the 8-minute mark when we saw it last at public safety.
You may have seen the monthly data,
yeah.
And in December they were at a little above 8
okay.
minutes.
Okay, so it's just, it could be confusing if you see it one place, one number, and then in another place. So that consistency when we're publicizing or publicly putting out numbers, there's a consistency. And then, to Mr. King's point, if there's things, I think the indicators wrapped around how the city, the health of the city, I like that idea that you're talking about some of the issues that we've looked at, if it's poverty or literacy, or that we are not always directly in control of, but it's reflective of how successful we are as a city. We could maybe start wrapping those into it and at least kind of be measuring, a snapshot of how we're doing and the health of our residents. So, all right, but yeah, I think it's great. I think it's going to help us. Some of them, like just the average cost of a home repair. I mean, that's that, or there was something else that was real connected to, it's just a matter of budgeting, putting that much money in it. I guess this is grant. I mean, people asking. So on that one, on number 17, that's up there now. So they're not getting requests for that level? Is that why we're not meeting that mark?
The current policy allows a maximum of $20,000 and so for home repair. And so they're just not going to meet that until the policy changes.
Until the policy changes. Okay. I forgot you didn't say that. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Mr. Atkins.
Yes. I think most of my questions have been answered, but just on the 360, and the state of the city, and we always try to find out what the state of the city, but my concern is most of the residents want to know the state of their district. And the 365 is a good plan for the whole city, but we look at housing repairs, they want to know what is going on in District 8. You look at streets, potholes, they want to know how many potholes is fixed in District 8. District 8 had 1,000 miles of potholes, so if you said that I'm fixing 3 potholes in the city, but District 8 got 1,000 miles. On the last month program, we had 500 miles of street we're going to repair, but I got 1,000 miles in District 8. But I do like the first step of this year, but also what do we look at district? And most people who look at the state of the city, they feel like part of the city is not, it's in the city, like Cleburne and Pleasant Grove. When you start talking about that, they want to see what is going on in Pleasant Grove. What is going on in Pleasant Grove now, you know? And that's something I don't see there. I don't know how can we break that in. When you get those numbers, if you go to, I guess, page 8, economic number, just go for number 9, for example, economic development, net new job created. What is the metric? Is that from where? Where did that come from?
Texas Workforce Commission. And what I would say in general about your comment is we heard that in town hall meetings on the budget as well, that people wanted district-specific data. And what I committed at the time was where we have district-specific data, we will include it. We've not done that in this iteration as we were trying to make sure we had this particular presentation and data in very, very good shape. But as we go forward and build on this, where we have them, for instance, potholes repaired, if we have that by district, to include district-specific data in the future. So that is our plan. I'm not sure on the jobs created whether that's going to be available in that way. But when it's a city service, we should be able to provide.
But I know we said net new job created. We got the unemployed. We got more job need. It is created there, but it can't get to work. So how we metrics find out how do those people get to work in the unemployed job, you know. So it could be more creativity. Page 9, I believe. Number 25, explain the metric for that. Number 25.
Certainly. So this is welcoming communities and immigrant affairs, and so this is community engagements undertaken. And, of course, it's a new office, and so I think when setting the metric and the annual target of 92 community engagements, they maybe didn't realize how popular they might be in terms of community engagements because they've already had 84 in the first quarter. So they are well ahead of what they have thought.
Okay. Kind of break down late maturity. Number of community engagement undertakings. So, therefore, the target was 23. We got 84. How do we manage it? How do we find a metric that said that we went from 23 to 84? Was that just one part of the neighborhood? Was that a part of the neighborhood that did not have any community engagement at all? How did we measure that?
Well, again, this is a new office that was created very recently, and so within the last year. And so in this case, I don't think it was particular to any neighborhood. It was just that we had not offered this kind of community engagements for the immigrant and refugee community and for stakeholders, those that Welcoming Communities works with, when we set the metric in the summer. And so I think that what we're seeing is that office is getting out into the community and is able to connect the various stakeholders in the community to establish relationships and be able to promote civil, social, and economic engagement and inclusion of those residents. And so they're probably going to be well ahead of their target all year. And what this speaks to is if we keep this metric, which next year in the budget process we'll be doing what all of you have asked and looking at these metrics and deciding if these are the ones we keep. But if we were to keep this, we certainly would set the target higher. And so those are the kinds of things that we will look at as we continue this year.
Okay. We have, I guess, 1 through 25. Do we have a budget for each one of these metrics? A budget? A line item? How much is it going to cost? Is that in that two-year budget forecast?
Absolutely. And so is there a specific budget to each of these metrics? That may not be, but the department, of course, has a budget for producing its work. And so it may be individual to the metric as to, you know, how it's budgeted. Is this metric a particular line item, or is it something that's more just part of the department's duties that's spread across different line items? And so, but yes, these are all things that we budget for.
So if we want to increase the number of community engagement undertaking, and we have a budget with inside that group, that department, Then you said if I want to engage more, it's going to cost me more money and cost me more people to engage. How do we bring that back to us and say, hey, if we want to increase line item 25 from 84 to 200, it's going to cost us $100,000 or $200,000?
And that is exactly what performance measurement is for.
Right. So
we want to come back to you in the budget process.
What I would like to see is that these engagements here, how much it costs to do this on a cost guy. How much it costs to do line 1 through line 25? Is that department or that hiring more people to get it done to go forward? Is that the way we're going to measure that? Is that a metric going to do it? If we got to set up a metric, going to cost a department to make sure we track this? So who tracks this?
Well, the departments certainly track all of their spending.
Then to do these 25 items, it's a cost to do each one of them for you to bring this report back to us.
Yes, certainly. Now, there are some measures, though, where
I know,
the cost is not directly in
that's
the department.
Correct.
So net new jobs created is one where we've said that's not a measure that's directly tied to a budget line item.
Right.
But for many of them, they are. And so we're asking departments, of course, to track all of their finances.
Well, that's what I like to see. And that way, to go forward when we're doing our budget for next year, we can say, oh, we need some more money in order to track this and get the metric.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Atkins, Mr. Brodnick wanted to jump in, too.
Thank you, Councilman. So I wanted at least, before we stop the conversation, I know Mrs. Rach has indicated she can get you certain information, trying to figure out so that we can be accommodating so that we don't end up not meeting your needs, trying to get an understanding of what it is you're looking for. And let me give you one example of welcoming communities. I think in my conversations, beyond how we set the target, with Mrs. Sedalia, we talked about many of her engagements and the work they're doing to help people prepare for, I think, whatever may come out of the conversations at the federal level on undocumented immigrants. And I talked to her about what we were able to accomplish this year as it relates to spending time helping and doing certain types of fairs and other kinds of things to get people registered, and asked her about how do we get to, if we served 500 people last year at whatever our budget was, if we wanted to really try to get at 2,000 or 2,500, lay out for me what it would take, back to your point, to get to that number. And so that's an exercise, obviously, we go through as we set goals and targets. I think we went through one of those this year around English as a second language and added more resources and was able to tell the city council how many more people we would be able to serve off of the waiting list. So the exactness of these measures really help us, and that will be available as we move forward. As it relates to just the general nature of these measures and many of them, that's their work plan. That's what they do. If you ask us to kind of break down specific things, we can try to do that. But in some cases, that may not be possible since we are a heavy service organization. And so it's just about my staff and my time. And one person may be doing 20 things. So I just want to make sure I can get you what you want. But that is exactly, as Ms. Rach said, why we do these, so that when you're asking those questions come June and July, you can point back to how many widgets we made with how many dollars. And so you're telling me, how do I get somewhere different, or why you're not meeting it, so maybe you don't need the dollars. So I just want to make sure we can get you what you want in the moment. So tell me again. I just want to make sure I'm clear. I don't want you to not get.
Well, you know, I think you just answered the question. Okay. It's something you can do, something you cannot do. Question to the mayor. Mike, with some of these measures we got here, I know we got Neighbor Up. Is some of these, do they intertwine together? You know, are they with these state of the city?
Well, not necessarily. Obviously, the work of those three general managers are impacting some of those metrics at the local level, but not on purpose per se. I mean, they're not focused against those numbers, and that they're not being held accountable to that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Felder.
Yes. Can we go to slide 23, please? So 23. Okay. So when we talk about the number of days to close a homeless encampment and all of that, and when you go to number 24, number of unduplicated homeless persons placed in housing. When I think of homeless solutions, it is noble. It is necessary. It is right to feed the homeless, to give them a place to stay. But if we don't give them training and job skills and place them in employment, we will be doing this for the next 50 years. And so what I would like to see is to integrate some sort of job training and include that in this metric. I don't know if they include it in the metrics when you talk about jobs created, but we have to get to a point where we are including a component that trains homeless people how to sustain themselves. I just saw it in Fort Worth. We're getting a lot of cues from Fort Worth where the homeless are being paid to pick up paper. The city of Dallas is going to have to, get with it in terms of doing things like that. So that's my concern. That's my comment regarding that. If you have a comment on it, I'd like to hear it.
I'd like to ask Nadia Chandler Hardy to make a comment if she'd like.
Thank you. Councilman, as it relates to workforce training, the number of unduplicated persons placed in housing includes safety net or wraparound services, which does include workforce, and so we contract for that with our service providers.
Can you give me some metrics on what we've done in terms of who we've placed, how many we've placed, when we've placed?
I can get that for you. We don't have it at our fingertips right now, but I definitely can get those measures to you.
So what I want to do is integrate that into this 365 dash, because when it comes down to it, like I say, we have to make sure that we're getting these people off the street, getting them into a training program, getting them into a meaningful way of life. And that's what my concern is.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you. So let me continue. I also have another concern. I'm not sure. Number 33. How do we, what is the mindset behind the percentage of residents within a half mile of a park? How do we achieve that? What is the goal to do that?
We actually have someone here from Park and Recreation ready to address that.
Hi, good morning. I'm Ryan O'Connor with the Parks Department. So that measure is it's a national standard. It's a component every single year of our park score. So it's just we are actively working with school districts right now, RISD and DISD, to partner with them to make their campuses available after school hours and weekends to make more land accessible to the residents. If we're successful in that endeavor, I expect our percentage to increase to perhaps 70%.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because it stayed constant, October 58%, November 58%, and December 58%. Do you have any time frame in which you expect the needle to move?
Yes, sir. Actually, just yesterday, RISD approved the agreement, the RISD Board of Trustees. That agreement will be coming before you on February 14th. The DISD agreement I hope to bring to you on February 28th, so we should see some movement hopefully soon.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Number 32, attendance at Office of Cultural Affairs supported arts events. So it looks like from October we went from 654,291, November 551,179, and then December 413,267. Can you tell me why it's going down?
Certainly, but actually I'll turn it over to Jennifer Scripps, who can probably tell you even better.
Can you come up front, please? I'm tired of looking over here.
Good morning, Jennifer Scripps, Office of Cultural Affairs.
Yes.
That is a trend that's probably pretty typical, although December did drop off a little bit more. That last half of the month when school gets out, the normal seasons kind of dip. So that's when people are on Christmas break and you won't have a full run at the symphony and things like that. So it really has to do with the holidays. Each weekend, if you think about it, is a big chunk of the inventory. Most of the arts programs are dark on Monday nights.
Okay. So when I click on this, what happens? What do I see? If I click on number 32, what would I see?
I guess I'm not sure of the question.
In the dashboard?
Okay. In the dashboard, what entities? Do I see the African American Museum? Do I see the Latino Cultural Center? Do I see the Symphony Center?
Yes, sir. So all of the arts organizations that receive OCA funding, all of the three that you name, turn in monthly reports 2 weeks after the close of the previous month. And so that is the cumulative of all of those OCA-supported artistic experiences.
Okay, so all of those organizations.
Now, I don't think the data is in there, but we have it at the OCA. We report the total.
Well, okay, so then that is my point. I would like to be able to click on that and see what's going on at the museum, African American Museum, the Latino Cultural Center, the South Dallas Cultural Center, the Symphony Center, all of those things. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like that to be incorporated.
Okay. We'll look into the feasibility of incorporating that, and if it's not within the dashboard, providing some information to you.
Okay. Well, it's good to provide it to me, but this is open to the public, right?
Absolutely.
So I want the public to have the same access that I have, so that's where I'm going with it.
Right.
Okay. Thank you so much. And my last question or concern is with number 35, percent of dollars spent with local businesses. Now, I'm looking at October, it's 61.3%, November, 58.3%, and December, 49.9%. Can you tell me about the slide?
I'll ask Aaron Gracie in the Office of Business Diversity to help me address that question.
So that's a cumulative total. So the first month, you're going to have a certain level of spend, local versus non-local. And then as the year progresses, it's going to fluctuate over time, long story short. So it starts out high. The next month may be lower than 50%, or it could be higher. It just depends on the activity that happens.
So, Ms. Raish, when I click on percent of dollars spent with local businesses, what do I see?
You're going to see
Go ahead.
You're going to see local versus non-local total. You're expecting to see a breakdown. We have that, and that's what you would normally see in the MWBE reports that we send out.
Once again, I want to see more detail. When I click on that, I think it's great to have percent of local dollars spent, but the minority business community needs to see what their share is, and that needs to be consistent. So that needs to be integrated in here. So when I click on it, I want to see what how much money African Americans dollars are being spent with African American businesses, Hispanic businesses, women-owned businesses, so on and so forth. We have to be specific in that.
So that detail is included in the quarterly report that we send, and you're asking to put it in here as well.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. The business community, the public need to have access to this. I want the public to have the same access to this information that we on the council have.
I agree with you completely, and I will say that we are working to build out this dashboard so that when you click on each individual measure, you do go behind and get that monthly data and more detail and, of course, explanation about what the city's efforts are in that area, particularly if we're off target. We want to make sure we're explaining to the public and to you how we're going to get on target. We'll work to incorporate deeper levels of data as we go.
Yes.
And so it may be an iterative process. It may take us a little bit of time.
That's fine.
But that's certainly our goal, is to build out that deeper and deeper data, and to allow folks who want to do a little bit of data analysis on their own to have that raw data there that they can export if they wanted to look at the numbers and do any kind of data analysis.
Mr. Broadnick, do you want to jump in there?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Ms. Raich, for talking about, I think, some of the background things. I just wanted to try to at least share some perspective on, one, the report,
It's Dallas 365 for 35 measures across six strategic areas. It's not Dallas 3,065. And so that is the purpose and intent of this, is to boil that down to, I think, public facing, in for the most part, measures that demonstrate things that we often engage with and hear from the public as well as the city council. Now, to Mrs. Rach's point, the ultimate goal will be to have a performance management and metrics, I guess, microsite or other that will have more than these 35, but other important measures that we track that are relevant that go into the detail you have. And I'd probably refer you to the City of Austin's performance management program and website, which is, I think, very detailed, almost overwhelming, and it goes through a lot of explanation around every measure they do, the validity of it, how they got it, as well as what the performance is. So that's what we're building to, and as y'all said quite often during this presentation, this is, I think, a good first start, and I want to commend Elizabeth and her team as well as our team, but we've got a lot more building to do. But I just didn't want to have people to think that it was going to be all those things in this one report. And we'll refine this, but I think we're going to build on that, to your point that you make. Those data points should be available to the entire community, and that's our hope to get there.
Thank you. And so, you know, everything that I've said is critique, not criticism. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Felder. Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Good start, I think. I like the concept of the 365, you know, every day, you know, service first and all that. I think that's strong. I do think refinement is needed. I think anytime you start off doing something, you have to build a framework, a template, and then, pardon me, and build from there. I do think some of the, if you'll go to a slide, and I think it's 17, or it's page 17 in the briefing, but I'm not sure what the slide number is because mine is not. It's where these six strategic priorities are. Does that help any?
Are you talking about number 17, average cost of home repair?
Well, it's where these six, let's see if I can get a better determinant.
Maybe that's.
There you go. That's okay. What I'm looking for. Just some of the kind of the goals of those respective things are a little bit thin. Again, a good start, but I think there needs to be a little bit of refinement there, a little bit better prose, you know, something a little bit more pizzazz. So that was just something that I noticed in my reading. Just kind of randomly popping around now, that once we get our new fire station on Great Trinity Forest, I think that's going to help the response time, you know, certainly in our southern Dallas area. I agree totally with Councilmember Atkins on this district delineation. I think we need that. Not only that, I think we really, Mr. Manager, we need a delineation between north and south. I know he's listening to TC. If you didn't hear me, I'm looking for something, you know, some north and south, you know, something below I-30. You know, because the idea with mayor's goals are grow south, and we're growing southeast, we're going south Dallas, we're also Pleasant Grove now. It would really be a help as we grow southern Dallas. Otherwise, if we don't really know where we stand, we're going to basically, we're just going to average out like a dollar average. It's going to look good, spread throughout the whole city, and we can have that feel good, beat our chest, and say, you know, overall, the whole city, we're doing well. But that doesn't help me in District 5 in southern Dallas. So I think if we can find some way to take the seven council districts that are primarily in the south or below I-30, choose the parameters, I think that would give us a better determinant of how we're doing there. I always like to illustrate the fact that, you know, 85% of the tax base is north of 30 in North Dallas, 45% of the land area, 55% of the land area with 15% of the tax base. The only way that we're going to get there, the only way we're going to know is have these metrics showing us, well, you know, here it is in Dallas, and it's good, but here's where we need improvement in southern Dallas, and I think that's the only way that we're really going to be able to get to where we're going. So recycling metric is helpful. I like that component there, and I'm looking forward to seeing our commercial recycling go up too, and maybe something then there about diversion, you know, amount of materials diverted, because that's really where the rubber meets the road, because that means more life for our landfill. And if we ever have to go get another landfill, Lord help us, because the land's going to be expensive. We're going to have to drive farther out. Fuel cost, everything is going to be exacerbated by doing that. Catchy title. It's got a lot of sizzle. Let's just make sure that we have, you know, the stake to go with it. And, again, a lot of feel-good boxes there. But, again, I just want to make sure that it's really meaningful and not be afraid to change. You know, if we just say that, you know, that metric just doesn't do anything, take a page out of Councilmember Kingston. You know, it just might not be the right metric. And I know we were kind of trying to land together a catchy title. We had to have 35. But just make sure they're the best 35 metrics. And Dashford for Dallas. I think it's great. I've noticed Austin's clearly that's a good approach. I don't know if we've looked at what other cities are doing in this regard, but I like this. I think this can take us a long way if we get it right. And by no means am I trying to be critical at all. I'm just trying to say, well, you have to start somewhere. You have to have a benchmark. You have to make some determinations. You have to make some value decisions. And let's just make sure that we get it right. But I do think as we go on over time, I think these will be meaningful. Hopefully the public will have a feedback mechanism, so once they see that, they can remark, that's good, but, or, hey, have you tried this? That's a kind of good thing. There used to be an old WFAA program. The guy that used to run Belo Broadcasting, you know, Let's Speak to the Manager was the old show that I used to watch as a kid growing up. So
Mike Shapiro.
Mike Shapiro. So you'd get to sit down, and Mike would get up there, and he wasn't very he wasn't warm and fuzzy per se, but we'd get him in front of the TV camera, but he would always answer the tough questions, you know. So maybe that's why WFA became a leader for many, many years. But anyway, that's the idea. Maybe we'll get TC on a TV program. Let Me Speak to the Manager for Big D. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this. A couple of thoughts. One is, this is excellent. It really is. A lot of work has been put into this. And this is, Mr. Kingston mentioned it, but it's a major step forward in how we manage this city. I think it is clear. I think it's transparent. And I think it is a great tool to be used. I would ask one question to clarify. Are all these annual goals just broken down by four?
They are.
Okay, so yes. As we learn how to do this in the future, obviously we don't want to do that.
There is seasonality to
right.
Some of it, and we've talked quite a bit about that.
Public safety, mm-hmm. it's heavily seasonal and should be based on your previous year trends and
that's
sort of
right.
thing. But that you can take care of that next year. And
there are software packages that help us collect the data and report the data. And so we're looking at those packages to find one that allows us to have some seasonality in the data.
That'd be great. Just to our team on this side of the room, you know, we've looked at this now. I think this is the third time, okay? So whenever they show us early on stuff, please give them the input then, and then they'll have it later. But kind of putting the input in the back end, it makes it more difficult. And then lastly, every management tool is how we use it and how human beings data doesn't make bad decisions by themselves. It's the people that use the data and make good or bad decisions. And I hope this is a tool that pulls the council together and helps us make decisions together versus pitting one against another and holding playing gotcha with staff. Because I've been in too many organizations where people use data to that. And then that makes you, as a staff and as an organization, pull in your turtle head into your shell. And to me, it's like we're being more transparent. How do we get better in this? And we've got to trust one another to how to use that data in these conversations so we don't nitpick, but we always get better. So thank you very much for this, and I'm excited about using this on a quarterly basis to make us better. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take item B up, Mr. Brodnicks.
Thank you, Mayor. As staff transition, I wanted to share, we've taken several steps in the past few months in response to the City Council's desire to develop a strategic transportation plan and vision for the city and the region, including creating, as you recall during the budget process, a transportation department to better focus the city's intentions. One of the department's first tasks will be to develop a dynamic mobility plan that coordinates and integrates all existing plans by the various agencies related to the City of Dallas's transportation systems into one cohesive strategy and document. The living plan will align with the city's six strategic priorities and empower stakeholders, residents, visitors, as well as this council in an effort to leverage all of our transportation assets for the maximum economic and social engagement of this community. And so I'm going to turn it over to Michael Rogers, our transportation director, as well as Majid Al-Ghafri, our assistant city manager, to walk you through this particular briefing. Thank you.
So good morning, Mayor and Council members. I would like to introduce Michael Rogers, our Director of Transportation. He will go through a brief presentation to you, and we'll be ready for questions.
Well, good morning, Mr. Mayor, Council members. I want to give you an overview over the strategic plan, mobility plan. What we're going to talk about is what is this strategic mobility plan, why do we need this particular plan, the elements of a plan, timeline, and potentially the next steps of what are we going to do. So what is this strategic mobility plan? I'm going to start with telling you what it's not going to be. It's not going to be a level of service plan where we're looking at level of service A for this street or B or C for a particular street. This is a plan that's going to look at things from a microscopic level. It's going to look at all of access and all of transportation, whether it's dealing with the vehicles, whether it's dealing with public transportation, whether it's dealing with those who are on bikes, those who are walking, those who are disabled. We're going to look at the whole realm of transportation. This also is a roadmap. As we have many transportation assets that are out there right now, this is the guideline, this is the roadmap for all transportation planning as we move forward into the next century. And this is also going to be an action plan, which we are going to look at the implementation of short-range and long-range plans and programs that we need to have within our community. So why do we need a particular strategic mobility plan? Well, I want to say and start with thank you for creating the Department of Transportation. This is a great initiative to really put a focus on transportation and for this city to become a leader in transportation. And this is what this mobility plan will do. It'll help us to coordinate all of the other plans that are out there. There's a ton of mobility plans with many of the partners, with DART, with TxDOT. There's the Downtown 360 city map. This is a great work that's out there, but we need to be able to coordinate that into one cohesive vision for our region, and that's what this effort is going to do. This also, by having a plan, it empowers you, the policymakers, to be able to give us direction in what you believe that we need to do. Gives our community an opportunity to give input into the process of transportation. It also helps us to leverage our assets as well. By having a plan, we have an opportunity to secure more resources. If folks know that, hey, the City of Dallas is proactive, has this plan, we can then, even from an economic standpoint, get more opportunities to come into our community. This also, by having a plan and the process that we're going through, will also provide partnership opportunities, working with our partners, which is going to be extremely important for us. This plan is also and will be rooted into the larger vision that we have. We as a city will do comprehensive planning, and mobility and transportation is a component of that particular process. So this work is going to be utilized for other purposes as well. This plan is also, as we heard in the last presentation, this plan is going to be coordinated with the strategic six all of the six strategic priorities that we have. We think that it's vital that we do that. Now, what are the typical plan elements that we generally see? Well, what we're going to do is create the vision, mission, and goals. And how do we plan on doing that? Is through community engagement. The community engagement is going to be key because we need to be able to get to every part of our community and make sure that this is not just for a segment of our community. We've done a lot of great work in certain areas, but we need to make sure this is for all of Dallas. And so through those community meetings, what we plan to do is determine what those guiding principles may be. And let me talk about that, what those guiding principles and what that means. Guiding principles are problem statements. Our community, in certain areas of our community, they may say, we have a problem with access. We have a problem with safety. We might have a problem with just not being able to get to certain locations. Transportation network has so many linkages to so many other areas, and we want to be able to determine what those principles are so we can start to address that. This program or this plan also will be rooted into collaboration and partnership. When you look at where we are and what we need to do within the region, we can't do it alone. We won't be able to do it alone. And let me just use an example, DART as an example. If we look at potentially a bus rapid transit is a solution to something, we're going to need, and there will need to be partners from a funding standpoint. TxDOT will need to be involved. The city will need to be involved. Other cities will also need to be involved with that to make this plan work. The city will need to be involved from a traffic timing, a signal timing standpoint. And then where those stops are. You know, people have to be able to get to those transit stops. And this is a responsibility that the city will have. And this could mean that, hey, if people can't get there, then we need to develop a sidewalk master plan, which we are planning on doing as well. So all of this process in developing the vision, mission, and goals is really going to be a part of a very robust community engagement process that we have. The development of the plan, city staff is already working on many different components of this plan, working on inventory of our existing conditions that we have, also deciphering between each one of those plans that's out there right now. We have and collected all the data there and determining and setting up the near engagement process that we're going to be having very soon. Another process that within will take place is we will be hiring a consultant. That consultant is to help us with transportation modeling. If we, and to give you an example, if we say we're going to get or should have a certain outcome, this is where the transportation modeling can come in to verify that we're going to receive X, Y, or Z. The consultant will also help us in developing a cost estimates for those projects that are long-term and short-term, and also helping us to go through those guiding principles and developing solutions for those guiding principles. We also will be looking at performance matrix as a part of this process. Very important that we measure ourselves and we have some guidelines as to did we do what we said we were going to do. As a part of the timeline for this process, as you see in the chart here, a lot of the time is going to be based on community engagement. We are going to engage with every part of our community. It's very important. We're going to do this within our neighborhoods, within the community groups that we have, and we will be working, and we already are meeting with our development partners, such as TxDOT, such as DART, and the county. We're going to continue to do that throughout the process. Another group is our mobility advisory group that we will be setting up, in which we've reached out to some of the players right now. But this is where I'm going to ask for your help. I want to meet one-on-one with each of you to determine and seek your vision that you have and to seek if there's any mobility advisory partners that you think should be a part of this process. That's going to be important because we will deal with and have those linkages to housing, economic development, and many other areas. So we want a diverse group that's going to represent our mobility advisory group. The next phase, which is going to be concurrent with our community engagement, is developing the policies and developing the recommended policies that we'll be bringing here. And those policies are going to be generated to solve those guiding principles that we have. And then the next stage of this process is the implementation. We want to have a robust implementation plan here, the short-term and long-term. However, I do want to point out there's things that are happening every single day that we're not going to wait to find the answers here to give you recommendations on items that are currently happening. Staff will be there to assist and work through items. So, but this is going to be our roadmap as we move forward. A typical plan generally is in the range of about $1.5 to $2 million, and so we anticipate that. And so our next steps here are to reach out. I want to reach out to each and every one of you and conduct those meetings and find out what your vision is and ensure that we have the right partners as the advisory committee. I'm more than willing to take any questions at this time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And Magic and Mike, Mr. Rogers, you've come on board and you've come on board with nothing but results. I want to make sure that you know I appreciate the meetings that we've had and the actions that you've taken on some concerns that I've had, and encourage the council to kind of have some meetings with him, because he's a man of action. He's proven that early, and we're not going to let him stop, okay? Just keep it going. I want to make sure I publicly acknowledge that. On community meetings, I would just suggest that all of my town hall meetings and all meetings that I have with the community, I would make sure that you, and would like for you to make sure that you are or someone is in attendance to talk about the transportation. Also, the thing that I continue to talk about with DART on the Lancaster Corridor, a bus that loops around so that folks can, you've seen some of the areas I'm talking about, the points where they can get off, and it's so difficult for them to walk a half a mile back up to Fiesta or back up to Save-A-Lot. So there's a need to have, and this is transportation and mobility, there's a need to have some concern there. And you spoke on consultants on page 7. Who consults the consultants on our behalf? Who reviews the consultants? We're hiring a consultant, I'm just asking.
Right.
So who will review the consultant and approve what the consultant is saying to us?
That's where we have staff. Our staff is going to verify any of the data that's actually going to be provided by
them. Because the only reason I'm asking, and I'm not trying to open up a can of worms, but I'm just saying, are we qualified enough to do the job, or do we have to go out and have a consultant to come tell us what we already know? Well, we have to approve when they come back to us what they have written and said.
I think it's going to take a village to raise that child, so we're going to have a staff as well as the consultant, as well as the partners, as well as the community meetings to be able to put this effort together.
All right.
The consultant will bring some specific expertise that we don't have, but we also bring other expertise to it. So that culmination of effort is going to be needed.
Okay. I'm in total support. I appreciate the presentation. I'm learning how to cut my comments a little short because I'm going to be pushing for the five-minute rule. I want y'all to know that publicly for council speakers. And I'm going to start abiding by it myself, but I want to make sure that folks know I'm very pleased with you being in charge of transportation. You've answered the calls on the concerns that I've had, and I'm looking forward and continue working with you and having further conversations so we can solve problems in Southern Dallas District 4. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good presentation. I echo Mr. Carraway's confidence in you two. I think that you're the right men for the job. I was particularly glad to hear you say that this will not be a level of service plan. I find that level of service engineering has locked the city into repeated mistakes in terms of mobility. Right now, the city is struggling to finish the widening of Cesar Chavez and Pearl, a project that got approved in 2012, I believe. It's been beset by problems related to trying to achieve level of service goals for downtown intersections that, frankly, we just need to abandon. City of Chicago, City of London, City of New York all have intersections that perform much worse than any intersections in the city of Dallas, and they get along just fine. We really need to abandon that. So how will the plan – one of the things we learned when we passed the complete streets policy is that nothing actually changes when council makes a policy until the engineering manuals change. So how will the mobility plan interface with the engineering we do?
Well, that's a very good question. And that's where a lot of –
I crafted it myself.
When I talk about policies, there'll be some process as well. As a part of this, we're going to come up with recommendations and collaboration amongst our own city departments as well. So this is a process that's not just going to be done with the Department of Transportation. This is something that Public Works, Housing, many of the other departments will be a part of this process as we go. And so from that, we would then anticipate those changes will be brought forth at that time, whether it's policy recommendations that we have or procedural types of changes that need to take place.
Mm-hmm. So we will change engineering manuals if we have to implement the policies we want.
If we need to, yes, we will.
Cool.
Yes.
I think that this is super timely. It's amazing to me that the city of Dallas hasn't had a transportation department and hasn't had a comprehensive transportation policy. And I think the result is that the partners that you mentioned aren't always exactly partners. They have sometimes run roughshod over us. I think we've seen that with DART for sure. We're also at a critically dangerous time in terms of state transportation funding. With the resignation of Victor Vandergriff, the city of Dallas is a sitting duck. And I have severe concern about what the state intends to do with mobility in the cities at this point. So it is far past time for us to develop a plan so that we can stand up for ourselves. And I really appreciate you all undertaking this process. Now, I will say, because I'm anticipating Mr. Atkins' question, you all need to make sure that we understand the value proposition of the consultant and what the consultant brings to the table that cannot be produced inside this building. And you don't have to do that right now, but at some point. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Felder.
Yes. I think I echo most of what my colleagues have said. I think, TC, you did an excellent job with the new hire, with the new transportation manager. I don't have a whole lot to say, but I do want to make a couple of recommendations. I think you do need to include the Metrotex Association of Realtors, as well as DARAB, the Dallas Association of Real Estate Brokers. That's the African-American real estate broker entity. And the last thing is... I heard my colleague, Mr. Kingston's comment with regard to DART. I have a difficult time dealing with DART when it comes down to covered bus stops. You know, when people on the bus stop in my particular district, I've been having a difficult time to get them to do that. There are a lot of elderly people, a lot of poor people that live in my district, and they need to be covered just like everywhere else in the city. And so I would appreciate if you work on that for us because that's very important in terms of transportation and mobility. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for the presentation. I echo Mr. Kingston in the fact that I do have concerns about, you know, how our transportation is going to be affected at the state level. So take me through this for a second. I know, you know, I'm always concerned about when we go to the citizens and we do community engagement. So tell me what that meeting looks like. Are you guys going to go in and say, okay, this is what our vision is for an overall plan? What do you think? Tell me how you think that kind of meeting is going to break down.
No, I don't see it's not staff's vision. It's got to be the community's vision. And their listening sessions, I think it's important to listen to what the community's issues and concerns are. And there may be issues that don't even seem like they're related to transportation. And so as a process, what we need to do and what we will do is try to see if the transportation network can help to resolve those issues. But the vision and that process is listening sessions in the communities.
Okay.
And if I may add, Councilman, there has been some great existing plans in the works. The city map and other planning documents that RTC did and of course DART and other partners. Those will be also discussed and integrated into that effort as well. So we're not going to forget the efforts that were done in the past. We're just going to integrate that and ask the community, is that the right thing for us? Is that the right priority for us? Is that the, you know, the
okay,
right
that, approach? That's what I was asking. So we announced a meeting once up in my area. People come to this meeting. So they're not going to go. We're not going to have it where they walk in. It's like, hey, what do you think about transportation? Do you like it? Do you dislike it? That's not going to be the theme of the audience or the meeting. So are you going to show them? Because you had mentioned earlier that you guys have already started doing some pre-work.
Yes.
But we already have a lot of plans out there. I'm all in favor of master plan. Don't misunderstand me. But what I don't want to do is this. Like last year, we just had one where, and I don't remember what the group is, but basically it was parks and it was this other nonprofit. And they go in, they're like, what do you want your city to be? Here's this great thing. And everybody says, well, we want 1 million miles of parks and nothing happened. So how do you keep people between the buoys in what's the possible, what's realistic, what's aspirational, what's stretch goals? What are y'all thoughts on that?
So if I may share with you, the first and most important meeting is really the meeting with the partners, because that sets kind of the foundation of what we need to discuss and how we need to discuss it. Because without the partners and the resources of the partners, knowledge-wise as well as funding-wise, it is going to be difficult. So setting the stage for that and working with the partners and key stakeholders kind of gives us the framework of what we can approach it and how we discuss it. And so based on that, I think bringing in a few outlines of some of the areas or some of the thoughts that we wanted to discuss with the community groups in terms of, for example, in terms of bus service, in terms of sidewalk mobility, because a lot of it has to do also with the city. It's not just about DART and TxDOT and others. It's about how we hone in our plans and make sure that they integrate with all of that activity, with economic development, with the housing piece. You know, master planning, even though we're kind of a semi-built-out city, but we have the opportunity to look at the areas that we haven't had good master planning and focus on some of those areas, but also focus on the already built-out areas.
Sure.
And understand kind of the deficiencies, if you will. That's why Michael mentioned the guiding principle. There really are problem statements that we need to focus on those and say, how do we solve those problems?
Okay. So when you go to the community and you say, okay, this is kind of what we believe, this is what we want to hear from you. You had mentioned in the briefing about kind of short-term goals, the less than 2 years, 2 to 5, and then kind of the long-term. Like, I mean, the long-term is the easy part because it's like we aspire to be a city that has all bike lanes or whatever the goal is, and people would, you know, probably universally want that. Knowing in the constraints of we just passed a bond program that we're filling potholes, things like that, what is an example of something where you come out of these community meetings and you say, okay, after listening to our customer, we believe in the next 3 years we should focus general funds on blank. What's an example of something like that?
I can give you an example. Say, for instance, if there's areas that do not have accessibility to public transportation, there's a lot of technology companies right now that are wanting to be in this particular community. We can start to look at, here's the problem that we have within this segment of our community. They don't have access. Well, let's try to mirror bringing in these technology companies to solve that particular problem.
Okay, great. I guess my only other thought would be just this. Knowing that when we go to the community, we say these things, you're going to get the community excited, which is fine. That's what we want to have the community. But I know as going through the bond program exercise, you know, you get multiple emails where a citizen reaches out on a street need, and it's like, oh, it's in the needs inventory. And then the citizen assumes, oh, it's been funded. So I would just really encourage you guys as you go about this and you get people excited about stuff, whatever stuff is, that you give them clear expectations that this may be 20 years from now, because if not, then it makes our job tougher, and it's already tough enough. So anyway, but I do appreciate your efforts. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
And sir, if I may, we're going to update you on a quarterly basis on our progress and some of the things that we encounter, so you're fully aware throughout the process.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I appreciate this presentation, appreciate the work y'all are doing, Michael and Magid here. I'm glad you're finally here because we were talking about it before you got here. So it's good to see this moving forward. One thing I felt like was missing from this presentation was any reference to the MVA. Staff rolled out the MVA the week before last, I believe it was. I think the council really embraced that. And if that's going to help us really drive our policy decisions, I think it has to be in all of our major plans. And so when we do the strategic mobility plan and when the consultant is used for that, I think part of the driver is how do we address some of the areas where we have opportunities to really further develop our city and how does mobility tie into that. So I would certainly in the future like to see, as we're talking about the mobility plan, the recognition, really the acknowledgement that part of our mobility plan is driving our economic development so we can achieve the goals that we're trying to do through the MBA. So I'd like to see that incorporated into it. Other than that, I'm excited to see it happen. I'm very excited that you will be working with the communities to make sure that there aren't some pockets or areas that we're not recognizing are problematic so we can address those problems. And then I also hope that the mobility plan will come back not only with just the needs, but maybe some prioritization or some categorical, you know, these are the things we can, you know, we need the most, or these are the things we can do the first, because sometimes you have different kinds of priorities. Quick and dirty, we can fix this. Long term is that. I'd appreciate that. The third thing I think is really important in the MBA, and in the mobility plan, and I'm hoping we're seeing, is at least a discussion for thinking of embracing technology, especially the way things are changing in our world. From bike share to electric cars to autonomous vehicles to new ways to do mass transit, all those are going to really change the way our streets are operating, especially with the autonomous component. And if this is a plan that's going to look forward, 50 years, 30 years, probably even 20 years, you know, we need to think about how do our streets interact with our vehicles. Are our intersections going to automatically be load balancing, for example, based on the traffic that's moving through them? Will our streets be communicating with autonomous vehicles to deal with capacity? You know, if you've got light, you can, for example, reverse lanes because you need capacity. Well, if you have an autonomous car, the street can literally tell the car, this lane is open for you to go that direction. And we're going to have to really think beyond if we want this to be a long-term plan or for the long-term component of the plan. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about the opportunities to use our mobility plan to enhance our neighborhoods, to enhance our walkability, to clearly recognize that our right-of-way is for all users, not just the car. And I think that there are real opportunities in there as well to continue pushing forward with our complete streets plan, our bike plan, our transit engagement with DART, all those things. And I know that's a pretty broad reach, but let's do a plan that in 5 years just needs to be updated as opposed to being chucked out the window and starting over. So thank you very much for your help.
Thank you. Mr. McGue.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I think this work is some of the most important work we have coming up. It's been something that's been an issue in a lot of the communities across the city, and it's long overdue. Thankful that you're here. Thankful for the attention on it. This is just absolutely crucial. My questions are, first, can you tell us a little bit more about the size of your team, your budget, what your sort of what falls under just your work on this part of this?
Okay. My team, the new team has been put together from, we have components, I'll say components, portions that have come from the police department, our parking. So we have parking enforcement as well as parking administration. We also have transportation planning, mobility planning as a part of the team.
It's like, then, how many people are working on mobility planning?
Every single person within the entire department is focused about 123 people in the entire department.
Okay, you got 123 people.
Right.
What's that budget?
And we have an operations section as well.
Okay. Okay, and what's your budget?
My budget is approximately $23 million.
Okay, so help me understand the need for going out to have this consultant at this time. Where's the gap in service that we need to go hire this individual or group?
Well, I think the gap is with the forecasting and the modeling. We need to be able to verify any of the recommendations that we have. We do not have the capacity right now or the ability to do a lot of modeling to determine if you do this, this is the outcome that's going to take place. The models generally are very expensive to have, and we just don't have that at this particular time within the Department of Transportation.
And what does it take to do that? Modeling is, I guess you're talking about software?
Right. It would be
so none of our partners have those, that modeling, either with TxDOT and the COG.
Actually,
and DART and
the COG has the forecast. So they have the big model that's a part of the whole regional program. However, since that's a regional forecast, we really need to zone in to some of the area plans and the area forecast as well. And that's where we can really start to make a difference. Because the regional model, it's a very good model, but we have some specific areas that where we might have a growth rate that is faster than what's in that model, and this is where we need to zone in on those particular areas, and that's where the regional model may not be the best tool for that.
Got it. Yeah, it seems like all the data is the same data. It's just where you take your slice of the analytics from. I'm just trying to figure that part out, but you're the expert in that, so I'll defer to your expertise. All right, so I'm following up on some of the questions that Councilmember Clayton was asking about the community engagement. We got $500,000 proposed in this for listening sessions. Is that what I'm hearing?
A significant portion of listening, community engagement. It's not going to be just all listening sessions, but there could be webinars and other areas in which we can start to engage with our community. But the bulk of any type of transportation plan is the community engagement piece, because that's where you get all of the information as to what do you need to do, and that's where those guiding principles come into. So, yes, the big portion is community engagement of this process.
Okay, and that's where you think an outside consultant needs to do that, as opposed to any of your 128 or some of the other people that are already in the Department of Transportation?
Councilman, the consultant is not going to be limited to just working with us on the community engagement piece. He or she will have the in-depth expertise, and not only the in-depth expertise, but the tools to be able to do some of the intricate detailing or analysis. For example, I'll give you an example, something that Councilman Kleiman mentioned, which is the reverse lanes. Not every agency does this. So in looking at a reverse lane implementation, you want to look at the basically the effect of what that reverse lane on access of side streets or intersection performance or on traffic signal lighting needs. Those are all some of the intricates. I mean, you know, we have great staff, and I'm not saying anything about the great staff.
So I hear you. So, but the engagement part is we just need to hear the community say, hey, we'd like another option here, and then the expertise comes into the modeling and figuring all that part out. It's the $500,000 we're talking about on, I think, doing what we do all the time and have done for the last many years, but certainly over the last 3 years, we've had a lot of these discussions over and over and over again.
And agree, but this is more of a guidance. A typical strategic mobility plan can cost between, for this size of a city, can cost somewhere between $1 million to $2 million. Again, well, not until we engage the consultants and get, you know, to the exact scope of work is when we start and negotiate. I mean, that number could be completely different. This is just done as a guidance, and the number could be a little bit different from that.
Okay. Well, I have a lot of reservations about this part of it. I think it's, as I said before, crucial work. I just think we need to do it as effectively as we possibly can. You know, both of you know, and we've had numerous meetings, transportation, in fact, impacts every single aspect of what we're doing. I'm fighting daily now about LBJ East and the impact that it's having on our entire transportation system, but as the top project in the region, and our lack of ability to move anything forward on that. And, you know, I'm thankful for our leadership under Mr. Kleinman and others here to push that forward, but largely our city has not been active in that. And so these are some of the things that as we look at how we have mobility plans, and it's got to impact, as was already mentioned, how we're going to deal with these things in Austin, how we're going to deal with it locally, because I got 100,000 people that are screaming out of desperation right now for a large transportation project, and we're not spending any money on consultants to help move that forward. We're not spending any time on that kind of issue. So it's a little bit frustrating as we look at all this. Not saying the need is there. We just got to figure it out in a way that makes sense. And I don't quite understand the way the budget breaks down yet, but I'll continue to engage in that process and help however I can. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins.
Yes, I think most of my questions have been answered. But back to DART, how are we communicating back with DART, you know, just about the benches, the trash cans at the bus stops? I mean, do we do a check and balance when we report that to DART? Do they correct that? What is the process and procedure? How do we do that?
So absolutely, we do communicate with them. We also have standing meetings, and now the management is having standing meetings on a monthly basis to talk about all of the issues and all the matters. Now, if you talk about specific bus stops, for example,
yes,
the issue is not just about the bus stop, but it's also about accessibility to the bus stop. Are there sidewalks in there? Is it a clear path? Is it lighted? Is there a need for a shed? All of these things are things that we're coordinating right now with them, because it is a partnership after all, and we want to make sure that we all do our due diligence and do our job in making sure that the resident has the amenities to be able to take that bus stop.
Do we have a metric or a map? You know, we say here is the city of Dallas, and here's all the bus stops at DART, and here is all the covers at DART. Here they have benches, here do not have benches, here do they have trash can. Is there a metric there, an inventory?
We have the inventory.
But can you get that? Is that by district or by city-wise? How is that?
City-wise.
Okay. So can you break that down?
Sure. Yes.
What I would love to have that in District 8 is how many bus stops do I have? You know, how many benches do I have? How many is covered? How many is not covered? You know, that type of information. Second is, number one, transportation, you know, we're trying to find out how do people get back and forth to work. And we do have DART appointees on the board. My concern is how do we work with DART in the inland port? Well, we got many jobs there, but people can't get to work because the bus is not there, maybe because of the route or whatever. Have you engaged DART to say why are we not getting ridership to those jobs in the inland port?
Not to that specific detail, Councilman, but that's one of the purposes of the strategic mobility plan, is to engage the partners in some of the opportunity areas. Okay. and establishing priority listing.
Okay, so if there's a priority, in 2006, the city of Dallas put in over $27 million in bond package for infrastructure to start in the port. And we got every who in the world who doing development out there in the port. We got jobs there, and people cannot get to work. So to me, that's a major problem, and it's been going on for the last 2 or 3 years. So in your mobility plan, have you came up with a plan to say to attack this? I mean, if not, when are you going to try to address it? I know, Madge, I spoke to you about before I talked to the county. Most of some of the cities are not in the city of Dallas, but we still got a whole lot of development out there. You know, like the Discount Tire, L'Oreal's there, the different businesses there. But my problem is they just can't get to work. Is that our responsibility?
It is our responsibility. And in March 9th, there is a meeting.
I know, I scheduled right. The meeting March 9th.
That's right. And so you will have staff from the city is a part of that. And these are items that, as we have our regular meetings, that's where we're going to get into the fine details of what do we need to do to ensure that there's better transportation options.
So when we hire the consultant to look at, are they looking at, I mean, what particularly is they looking at a whole department? Are they looking at a whole city of wires? I mean, tell me what is a consultant really? I know we haven't did a scope, but what is they actually looking at? What is our number one priority that a consultant should be looking at, city wires in Dallas?
So the consultant is going to take a look at the overall framework of mobility and transportation in the city, and he or she is going to work with us on the different areas in terms, again, of the intricate modeling of this. And modeling is sensitive in the sense of you can see it from a 50,000-foot level and make assumptions on what a network should be and then get a little bit lower to a 20,000-foot level, and that picture completely changes. And then you can get to the ground level, and you'll get a picture that is completely different from anything else that you've studied before. What we wanted to do is we wanted to do the practical level, not the forecasting level.
Okay.
And the consultant has the ability to work with us and our assumptions, and in terms of citywide, but also in terms of community-wide, in terms of specific areas, to be able to hone in on the detail and give us the best option of what a network is, what a partnership is, how in line with the market value analysis is in terms of housing, economic development opportunities, accessibility to the freeway. All of those are very important. And that's the work of a consultant that, frankly, I will tell you, again, we have great staff, but that's the consultant's niche that we don't have. That's their core business. That's what they do.
Okay. So I guess my homework to you would be, number one, in District 8, that from Redbird Mall all the way to Cleburne Riley, going east and west, that people can't get to work. People in Highland Hills, as part of the town, got to go all the way downtown to transfer to get back to their house to buy food. People do not have ridership that can get to work in the inland port. So to me, we creating jobs, but we do not have a mobility plan to hire the people who my district growing in population just can't get to work. They can't get to the grocery store. They cannot get to the shopping center if they do not have transportation. So the problem that I have in District 8, if you don't have a car, you're in trouble. Point blank. So my deal is looking at this plan is that we got a university, we got UNT, we got Cedar Valley, we got Paul Quinn College, we got all this stuff going to Pleasant Grove, but they just cannot get to work. They cannot get to the shopping center. I know that's probably DART responsibility, but I think it's also the state of Dallas responsibility is that how do we make sure communities can get around in their communities?
And that is one of the key driving principles for that particular area. And that is one of the things that we're trying to gather with the community engagement. And obviously we know this particular issue, but that's where we need to solve that particular problem with this mobility plan. And this plan is going to have multiple items. There's going to be a multitude of items that we need to resolve. We may have we will have other issues in other parts of the city, but that is one of those guiding principles that we must and we will have to solve within your particular district.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Callahan.
Thank you, Mayor. Just randomly right up front, I'm interested in kind of developing more of these people movers. I don't know really what you call them. They're kind of a conveyor belt like we have at DFW Airport, and I'm not sure if we have those at Love Field perhaps. But in the convention complex would be, again, areas where, because that's a long walk from A to D. I don't care. You know, I like to walk, but a lot of older people, they probably find that a little bit challenging. You know, if they park in A or B, and then they have to go to D and then make their way back. Obviously, we have some escalators along the way that helps, but I think that would just make the convention center more friendly. Otherwise, are there other areas, perhaps in the downtown corridor, as we build our transportation network, that we might consider doing those? Also, the fact that, you know, obviously the temperatures can get really, really hot in the summertime, so if you're in a suit and tie, if you had a people mover at certain areas or even underground or within our buildings or land bridges or whatever, it can kind of accelerate the ability for people to move along. We need to walk, sure, that's good exercise aerobically, but again, we have a lot of needs challenged people, so I always want to be cognizant of that. Love Councilmember Adkins' idea about this inventory. You know, we're always in Southern Dallas trying to play catch-up, having bus stops and benches and then cover bus stops and then having enough trash cans. There's just such a the ridership is really high in our area, and a lot of school kids, you know, use the buses to get to Townview, or they may go to Dallas County Academy, or whatever the case may be. But if you'll look at those areas, those bus stops are heavily used, and there's simply not enough capacity. And I've been very clear and upfront with Gary and Michael and Jesse over at DART about those challenges that we have. Better master planning, yeah, that's what we're here for, and I welcome Michael. I really appreciate what you bring to the table and Madge's background as an engineer. some way, you know, the planning on terms of infrastructure, but in terms of budgeting too. Some of this obviously is going to be in the general operating budget, but we also need better scheduling, forward thinking about the 2022 bond, the 2027 bond. How does that coalesce between general operating budget as well as that? Really a big fan early on of this Hyperloop, but in that 50 or 30,000 foot view, imagine, you know, how does that work together with the Texas High Speed Rail, the DART, the expansion of the trolleys, streetcars, as well as other ancillary type things, bicycle or what have you. You know, all that needs to go together. And again, we'd like to dig once if we can in some of these environments rather than going, oh gosh, I wish we'd have thought about that Hyperloop. I wish we'd have thought about that. You know, let's get it all out on the table. Lee makes some very excellent comments about, you know, the forward thinking nature, you know, with driverless cars, and there may even be things out there that we don't even know are on the horizon. But how do those dovetail, parallel wise, how do they work in unison together? Obviously, there's a big rage for bicycle trails and bike lanes, and as we go forward and do land planning, master planning, we've got to see the future to see that that area is really growing, new houses are being built. Is there going to be a bike lane there? At least let's have that as a checkbox when we do replatting in terms of planning. Maybe that's another checkoff. Maybe another copy of that plat goes to the transportation department. Probably should anyway. Just to take a general look, see that, yeah, we ought to try to build in. Maybe we need some right-of-way there. Maybe we need a wider sidewalk there. Those types of planning aspects, I think, can be very important. And I know that you guys think about a lot of these things, in general anyway. The average person probably does not. But that saves us money, if we can just figure this out going forward. Even if we don't build it then, at least we can allocate space for that. But I love the aspect of wider sidewalks. It makes it a lot more friendly. You got strollers and bicycles and people and, service delivery and all these aspects going on. And if you have a narrow sidewalk, it's a bit dangerous when you're at the edge of the curb or street, especially when riderless cars come. There's not going to be much warning. How do they know? I mean, I don't understand the computer aspect, but that there's a danger there. Technology embracement, we have to, and then also enhancement of those technologies. Signalization is another aspect of this, too, and with these 360 cameras we have, we need better planning to make sure that those 360 security cameras are in these zones where we have high transportation interconnection or interactivity between whether it be bikes or trolleys or whatever. The 360 camera can be helpful from a security standpoint, because I know the police, DART, or DPD, or park police, or park rangers, they can't be everywhere. Always have to ask the question, what's in it for Southern Dallas, because I'm a Southern Dallas representative. But more focally, what's in it for Pleasant Grove or Southeast Dallas, District 5? Now, those are the people that I represent. So can we be first in something, for change, rather than saying that it will get to you at some point? Yeah, I'd just like to be first in something just one time. That would be great. Really appreciate, again, your leadership on what you bring to the table, and also for my colleagues, very capable leadership, Mr. Lee Klamman, as the chair of our transportation. I think he really gets it, and I think he'll be a great partner, and I'm just proud to be his vice chair. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Mr. Felder.
Yes, just quick couple of things. Coming to District 7, well, already in District 7, we have the Texas Horse Park. And we also have the new golf course. 181,000 people are coming to the golf tournament in May. We've got to get Pemberton Hill Road widened. We got to get it resurfaced. We got to get bus stops there, because that is going to be a hot corridor right now. I mean, for the near future, a lot of things are coming to that part of the district. And so I'm asking you to please focus on the Texas Horse Park as well as the golf course, because that's hot right now, very hot. Thank you.
Thank you. This is important, obviously, as everybody's talking about. I just want to reiterate two things. One, that Mr. Klamman said. I suspect this mobility plan will start with the MVA, and it'll all fit into the MVA. And the housing and the economic plan that's being done. I mean, it's got to be seamless, or we have wasted a lot of money. And I think maybe you nodded. I just wanted to make sure I get you on
that
the record.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct, yes.
I think you believe that. I just wanted to make sure you did. And the other thing is what I heard you say to the whole city council. You're not going to talk to anybody in public or anything, no community meetings till you talk to each one of us privately.
I do plan on reaching out to each and every one of you privately, and I'm going to try to set those meetings, well, in each one of your council areas with your staff, to understand that we have the right folks that are going to be a part of this particular plan.
It's beyond...
Before, it's, yes.
It's
before.
Beyond the right folks. It's to listen to the points of view.
Absolutely.
See, I think there's a discussion, and we'll maybe talk about it at the retreat, okay, that the citizens can talk about needs. This is my experience with customers. They're very good at needs. Sometimes you'll get ideas, but it's the folks that spend the time with the citizens that spend the most time on ideas and making sure that those ideas are expressed to you early in the process.
Yes.
Great. I thought I heard that. So, Council, you're all cool with that? Okay, good. So we're not going to have any problems about that down the road. Okay. Great, thanks. Item C, let's do it. We're doing good. Obviously, Mr. Thomas and Mr. Griggs and Miss Grayson are the talkers.
No, I'm the talker.
Yeah, no, we've done it. It's obviously.
Mayor.
Mr. Broaddus.
This briefing today is to discuss two rate case filings by Atmos. Staff and our consultants have negotiated with Atmos and have a proposed settlement. Staff will review our options today, and Council will be asked to consider the settlement next Wednesday on the 14th. Council's action must be taken by February 15th, so we're briefing you today to share with you the option. Elizabeth.
Thank you. I'm joined today by Jack Ireland, our Director of the Office of Budget, and by Nick Fehrenbach, who is our utility franchise expert. So Nick is going to present the briefing today, and I think that we've had a lot of discussions in the last year about Atmos, and I think hopefully we're in a place, a good place for Council, and I'll turn it over to Nick.
Good morning, Mayor, members of the City Council. Sort of as an overview, I'm going to go over the purpose of the briefing, and out of respect for your time, I'm going to do a very quick summary of both of the 2017 gas cases, the prior one and the current, along with the proposed settlement, lay out the options for Council consideration, and give you the City Manager's recommendation. The purpose of my briefing today is just to update Council on Atmos Energy Corporation's statement of intent to increase rates, consider the options, and review the City Manager's recommendation. Now, the current rate case is a little bit complicated because we had two rate cases filed in 2017. These two cases overlapped and were running concurrently for a period of time. In January of 17, Atmos filed a case under the Dallas Annual Rate Review Tariff. That case was considered by the Council in May, appealed to the Railroad Commission, and ultimately decided December of 2017 by the Railroad Commission, granting a $9.9 million rate increase to Atmos. In August of 2017, in response to the Council's request that we order Atmos to lower rates, they filed the second case, which the one we are now considering, so it overlapped. This one was for an additional $6.3 million over the rates that the Commission set in December and would have an increase of about $3.18 a month to the average residential customer. City staff, along with our outside experts and consultants, was able to negotiate a proposed settlement of this case that would result in Atmos not increasing the rates by $6.3 million, but actually reducing the rates currently in place by $5.7 million. The bottom line is that the typical residential customer would get a rate reduction of about $1.60 a month, and that would begin in mid-February after you adopt the settlement next week. The options for the City Council consideration are to simply approve the original rate request and grant the increase of $6.3 million, approve rates per the proposed settlement, which would become immediately effective. It's an overall decrease in the current rates of $5.67 million, or about 5.61%. The Council could just deny the request and the current rates would remain in effect. Atmos could appeal that decision, though I suspect they'd probably let the current higher rates remain in place. Or the council could just set rates at some other level that they deem appropriate. However, Atmos could appeal that decision. Current rates would remain in effect until the Railroad Commission could completely vet that appeal, probably August of this year before a final decision would be issued. Representatives from Atmos are here in the council chamber also. The city manager recommends option number two, adopting the proposed settlement, and an item will be placed on your next week council agenda. It would result in an overall decrease in Atmos rates within the city of Dallas of $5.67 million. And again, the average residential bill would decrease by about $1.60 a month, effective right after adoption. I will, at this time, open it up to any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Felder.
Yes, so I was looking at the appendix. Let's see, I think it's slide number 22. So the customer charge currently is $21.25, and you're requesting $21.50. And then I went over to the appendix, page 23, and I noticed that the commercial customers, there was no requested rate increase. Why is that?
In Atmos's rate filing, they updated depreciation rates, and with the new depreciation rates and the way the cost is allocated, a majority of the investment in plant, which is driving their annual filings, the majority of that cost in new pipe flows through to residential customers, not to commercial customers, because it's on a per customer basis. And as a result of the changed depreciation rates and cost allocation, the request they were asking for actually put more cost onto the residential, and as a result of the commission's ruling in December, would be a slight decrease in the commercial rates.
And so, to the listening and the viewing audience, I mean, I would feel personally, you know, I use gas, I have gas in my home, and so do my constituents. I think that is unconscionable and unfair to ask for a rate increase on residential customers and not on commercial customers. Basically, to me, it seems like the residential customers are subsidizing the commercial customers.
Cost allocation is an art, not a science. The current cost allocation model was approved by the Railroad Commission in appeal of our prior rate case. I don't necessarily personally agree with the cost allocation, but I have to live with it. It makes for some strange results, as in this one, where one class of customers getting an increase and another a decrease. It is mixed results. As part of the proposed settlement, we simply applied the 5.61% reduction uniformly across all classes of customers so that our commercial and industrial customers would benefit from the settlement and not just residential customers.
So that's where I was going next on slide 24. The current authorized rate is $805.75, and Atmos requested the rates to be reduced. So, you know, to me, I just don't see where the benefit is for the residential customer. I think the residential customer is bearing the burden of industrial and transport customers as well as commercial customers.
The current methodology flows a lot of the cost on a per customer basis, and yes, the residential customer is paying more of the cost for that system than the other users.
Okay. I cannot support that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Fehrenbach, I appreciate all of your patient explanation of these rate cases. It's been fascinating and frustrating to learn this area of law and utility, and I wonder if we're paying you enough. And whether you might need PTSD counseling. Okay, so let me get this straight. From a year or 13 months ago, our rate payers are essentially up a percent, 1.6%, something like that, once you net out the increase from the first rate case with the decrease from the second rate case. So let's go to slide 15. Is there any reason council would approve number one other than just being tired of being elected?
I can think of no reason why a rational council would do that.
I suppose you're required to present us with it as an actual option, but I don't think it's a practical option. So you were successful in negotiating Atmos out of its own rate case and to get back some of what they got out of their previous rate case. Is that essentially what happened?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think we should thank you and the consultant in Atmos. I've been very upset that these I think they've been over-collecting for a long time, and if they're going to reverse that, then I think we ought to say thank you. So I appreciate this briefing, and I'm fully in support of the manager's recommendation. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kleiman. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I think Mr. Kingston kind of made the point, which is after all this is said and done, there is an increase in the rates, correct? From the beginning of 17 to now.
If you look back to January of 17, yes, there is an increase in rates.
We just reined it in. We materially reined it in.
And
my opinion, yeah.
There was a significant increase that effectively went in June of last year and has been in place. And
so what happens to the money that between June of last year and now that would be not this current rate that we're setting?
We are only setting rates going forward. We can't retroactively set rates. Now then, for the rates that were in effect from June until December,
mm-hmm.
those rates were under bond, and there is a refund coming to customers that should be appearing on their February bills. It's not a significant amount because the Railroad Commission only reduced their request by approximately $500,000,
mm-hmm.
and which I ran some rough numbers, and it's about 16 cents per month per residential customer.
Okay.
Not a refund that's going to be significant, but right. that is flowing back.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And again, thank you very much for your hard work on these regulated monopolies. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I will be in support of number two of the manager's recommendation and the proposed settlement. I think we've done a lot of saber rattling for months to get back kind of right where we were before. So I appreciate what they're doing in our area, District 5. There's a lot of new gas lines being installed, and they are residential gas lines, and I understand it takes you have to spend money to make money. And but that's going to make our area safer. We've had, when I first got elected 4 or 5 years ago, we had a couple of bad incidences, you know, with explosions and some older gas lines, older neighborhoods. So they're rectifying that now. So I appreciate that capital expenditure to be able to get us there. So I think the selection or the item number two there, I think, makes the most sense for us. Thank you.
Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor, and I just want to pass on our thanks. I know we just started in our government performance, and we, you know, took the initiative to go ahead and set a different rate and put you in a spot to go negotiate on our behalf. So thanks for getting us here today, and I'll be supportive of the manager's recommendation, too, which is obviously is option two. Thank you.
Thank you. Items over here. You know, what we could do is take our afternoon speakers right now, okay? We've got, while Billy Ray's going to the podium, we have an event at 12 o'clock, which is the opening program and exhibit for Black History Month in the lobby. The exhibit is brought to us by the Black Employee Support Team BEST. It's called Remembering Black Dallas. So I wanted to kind of be down there at noon. Why don't we do this, and then we'll talk about next.
Thank you. We have two end of meeting open microphone speakers. Sam Ramada, you may come to the podium. Individuals allow 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor. When your time is up, please stop and address your
What's the time?
You have 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time on the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop and address your comments to Mayor Rawlings only. You may begin.
Good afternoon, Honorable Mayor, Honorable Council members. My concern today is I'm coming on your behalf because I have been here for the last 6 years trying to address a concern why this auto body shop commodity for the auto body repair is only being given to one vendor. I came here 6 years ago, and I stood before you, and I never got an answer from anybody. And I came back 4 years ago, and the same thing, I never got an answer from EBS or from anybody. Why the EBS and the purchasing department insisting in giving this commodity to one vendor? The amount of contract for this year, and I came back on December and I addressed the same issue, by the way. The amount of money for this commodity is $12.5 million. The amount of vehicles that the city repairs every, the city has about 5,500 cars. We could never understand why the city would like to put 5,500 cars in the hand of one repair shop. When back in the day, this commodity was distributed among vendors. They were minority, non-minority. Everybody in the city of Dallas had benefit from this commodity. Either they were vendors, minority, non-minority. EBS have decided to put the whole commodity under one repair shop. They have deprived a whole lot of city vendors, either minority or non-minority, from this commodity. Okay? We could never get an answer why from the city and the EBS, why they have decided to deprive other vendors from this commodity. We have submitted an open record request 3 months ago, and we wanted to know what's the downtime for these vehicles when they go to this one repair facility to be fixed by one repair facility. What's the downtime for these vehicles to be in the body shop till they come out? We have never got an answer. We have requested an open record request for invoices. We have never got an answer. But Mrs. Ray, we submitted the request. She submitted the request to EBS, and per her conversation that the request went dead or went cold. We have submitted another request. We were just trying to find out to prove how come one repair facility can handle 5,500 vehicles. This practice have deprived a whole lot of vendors from this commodity. When we came to the pre-bid conference back in June, the purchasing department, they were surprised that there were not too many vendors. 4 years ago, we were about 21 vendors doing this commodity. Today, it's only three vendors. They were wondering why the room is not full of vendors. I would sit down and I wonder why the city have pushed all these vendors away. There's got to be a reason. And the reason is, all the vendors, they knew that they're not going to be getting this contract. That's why they just walked away.
Thank you.
Thank you
for being here.
Arjun KC, not present for the afternoon.
All right. What we're going to do then is we'll take a break. I'm going to read us going into executive session. Okay, we'll take a break because of the event, the Black History Month event downstairs, and it's going to be a tribute to former City Council member Juanita Kraft as well. And we will meet back in the lunchroom at 12:30. Okay. No, that's not going to work because we need to come back in here to close the meeting, okay? So get your lunch and bring it back here at 12:30, all right? And we have one executive session. I would try to power through it, but I don't think it's a little bit longer executive session discussion in talking to Mr. Castro. And, yes? Well, yeah, I mean, his brief is going to be short, but I got a feeling it's not his briefing. No, I don't. Okay. All right, wait a minute. Okay, fine. We'll try to do it, okay? We'll do it right now, okay? And then if that happens, then we can come back in and do it, okay? All right, so ask everybody to leave. It is now 11:52. I like that. If we can make it happen, I think we'd be happy. 11:52 a.m. on February 7th, 2018, the City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matters described in today's agenda. The matter is Yvette Will Rapp for Weed Gablaze v. City of Dallas. Okay? Thank you. I know. Okay, thank you. Go ahead. Great. Thank you. The City Council has miraculously completed its closed session in under the time I thought, and under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, and at 12 noon on February 7th, we have returned to open session. With that, we have no other further business. The meeting's adjourned. Thank you. Obviously, always.